time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, let's start talking money.
What's up, y'all? It is the 3 o'clock hour. I'm Maggie Dawn, and it is therefore time for Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money. Today on Maggie and the Millionaires, we're joined by a guest with a very famous last name, Abigail Disney. And yes, I mean that Disney. Abigail is the granddaughter of Roy Disney, the grandniece of Walt Disney, and she is, in her own right, an Emmy-winning documentary filmmaker and co-founder of Fork Films, a nonfiction media production company. She's a philanthropist, social activist, and we love this, of course, a member of the Patriotic Millionaires herself. She's here today to talk with us about a film she produced and directed called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales, an examination of inequality in America through the lens of her family's company. Abby, thanks so much for being here. I really appreciate your time. Tell us more about The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. And I've been aware that it's not always the greatest company in terms of the way it's managed, even if it's done things that people in this country really love and cherish in a lot of ways. But I got reached out to in 2018 by a group of the Disney workers, the folks that do all the amazing stuff at the theme parks. And they were getting minimum wage in 2018, which was at the time $11 an hour in Orange County, one of the most expensive counties in the country. And they were finally, all of the unions had gotten together after years and years and years of being divided and conquered. And they did a study of their workers and found that 73% of workers at Disney could not cover their basic costs every day, even though when they were working full time. And this study revealed lots of other appalling things, including homelessness and all that. So I had a Facebook message one day, and normally I don't look at Facebook messages, but this one really captured my imagination because I grew up with those folks. You know, my grandfather would take me and I'd hold his hand, and you know, it was some of the best memories of my life. But he used to say to us, like, those people work really hard. You better respect those people. And so when somebody reaches out to you after like that kind of memory from your childhood and says, I literally cannot feed my children working full time at this company, is there anything you can do to help us? And so I went out and met with them and got pretty pissed off when I heard what they had to say, and ended up making a film about it because that was the best way I knew to not only address the issue short term at that company, but sort of talk about how we got to this place, because Disney's actually typical of American companies. And it's been a long journey from where they were in the 1950s and 60s to where we are today. It's a very, very conscious journey on the part of Wall Street and Republican politicians. And I wanted to kind of lay that out there using Disney, which is just the quintessential American company.
There's so many things that I think are laudable. And one is the acknowledgement and the idea that I'm going to do something about this problem using your super skills, right? You're a filmmaker, that's your medium. So mad respect, Abby, for that, first of all. And especially because you're talking about you and your family, which is incredibly personal. What was that, a hard decision? Like, how did you, was it just obvious, of course I'm going to use Disney to explore this issue? Did you have resistance? How did you balance all of those ideas and conflicts and loyalties in your head?
I did inherit some genes. And one of them was a marketing gene. And I am not immune to thinking strategically about the use of my name to make sure a film gets seen. So, you know, I call it whoring out my name, you know, gotta do it sometimes. And it does help me get more attention. And so I'm happy to use it when it feels possible to do so. But beyond that, you know, the thing is, like, every privilege I have is on the backs of these human beings, you know, and it's personal. It's very personal. Yeah, it was personal for me to talk about my family, but it's even more personal for them to have kids they can't feed, you know, to have cars they can't gas up, to have diabetes they can't treat. So For me to think it's not personal is absurd and privileged and entitled in a way I don't want to be.
Bravo for that. that takes some deep self-awareness. Frankly, I don't see in a lot of candidates
not a common thing.
No, from most GOP candidates. I wanted to ask you, when you look at Disney and through this film, do you think the changes that have happened, which largely is the degrading of a livable wage, right? Yeah. And trying to increase profit margins, not by managing costs in different ways, but by paying people less. Do you think it's representative of how corporations have, frankly, devolved? I'm not going to say evolved, devolved in America since the 50s.
When I went out to meet with them, what I saw was everything about corporate America for the last 50 years, Disney did, right? Mm. So they had people on salaries who had healthcare and pensions, and the salaries were sufficient that they could raise families. They could have a house, they could have a car, they could send their kids to school. At the time, we were spending enough money that their car wouldn't wear out or break down too quickly on the roads, that the schools were decent, that you could go to college without impoverishing your family, or you could get healthcare without impoverishing your family. So first of all, the Republican project was to demean and diminish all of those things. And then the company did what companies everywhere have done, where they laid off the salary workers. So it used to be that they would encourage you to come at 18 or whatever and pour the sodas, do the ticket taking and whatever, and then you'd work your way up. And for a long time, the guy who ran Disneyland was someone who had come in as a soda person, you know, as an 18-year-old. So there was this dream. And, you know, yes, I call it the American dream. And it was just turned on its head. The idea of someone working their way up from the inside is now a sort of ridiculous thing. And the hourly workers who replaced all those salaried workers are treated like endlessly replaceable cogs. They're not treated like human beings, and they're certainly not looked at as assets, you know, that help the company. But the biggest violation to me about this is it's not that they were paying people less, but they were also, by the way, while they were paying them less, they were also pushing on productivity. Yes. So for less and less money, you had to do more and more in an hour. But also, they moved so much capital to shareholders, you know, billions and billions and billions of cash every single year got sort of pushed up the capital stream into the hands of stockholders, 80% of whom are the richest 10% of society. So this was a massive shift of capital and wealth from people who did not have wealth to people who already had wealth. It's a violation of everything, I believe.
And frankly, the social contract between, capitalism as concept, as an economic operation, and the workers that are essential to make that work, right? It's just, it's shocking in its callousness.
Yeah.
And certainly we've talked about this very, and you so ably and clearly described it, Abby, it is trickle up wealth, right? Like that is what's going on. There is no wealth trickling down. Yeah. But the mythology here in part, which I think you're getting at, right, is that underpaying workers, that depressing wages, paying people the very least you can pay them, is an essential requirement for corporations like Disney to be successful. Is this true? Would Disney still be successful if it was paying people a living wage?
Yeah, well, there was an ideology, right, that kind of took hold of the business world, and it kind of overlapped a lot with ideologies that were being pushed in the world of politics as well. And one of the ideologies was, you know, your job as a wealthy person is to get as much as you can. And if you're a wealthy company, you make as much as you can. You just do. That's what you do. There's no limit to what you can do to accomplish that. So a lot of I know this sounds like a weak word in this context, but decency fell by the wayside. And so more and more, if you are looking to be taken seriously, as any CEO in America is, by Wall Street, you wouldn't be such a chump as to pay more than you absolutely had to. And when I first started talking about this, business people that I knew and people in my world said, well, but that's just the going rate, Abby. That's just what people pay. And I'm like, well, is it? Because it may be what people are paying, but it's not what people have to be paying. Like that beautiful open marketplace that you keep talking about, that unfettered marketplace, is actually supposed to be working the opposite way than what is happening right now. If it were truly about the market, you know, people would go elsewhere and other people would offer them more money. And that's not happening in this marketplace.
Well, I think you've put your finger on something that I think is really essential here. And that is the why of that. And the metrics by which we adjudged corporate success evolved with what I'm going to call the financialization of corporate management, the Wall Streetization. Right. Like, why are people ticked about 2008? Because not a single one of them spent a day in jail. They're doing the same things to our corporations by metricking things that, frankly, unbundle the interest of the worker with the interest of the corporation, at least in theory. Now, of course, that breaks down in practical application. Folks, my very special guest this half hour before I get carried away even more is Abigail Disney. She's an Emmy-winning documentary filmmaker. Yeah, she's of that Disney family. And she's the co-founder of Fork Films, a nonfiction media production company. And she's just produced and directed a movie called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. Abby, Disney employees have been trying to unionize. How has that been going? What's the impact?
Well, at Disneyland in Anaheim always had unions because at the time it opened in the mid-1950s, you had to have unions. It just wasn't possible not to. So much as my grandmother, grandfather, and great uncle would have preferred not to have unions there, they had to bring them in. So they've always been there, but, you know, because of law changes and rule changes and attitude shifts in the 80s and 90s, the unions lost so much of their power and their capacity. And the company very consciously divided them off from each other and kind of forced them into these really weak positions. And of course, there was that massive abandonment of unions by workers because of a public education campaign from Republicans. So they're having a hard time, you know, having the power that they really should have to make the demands that they need to make.
Special guest today is Abigail Disney. She produced and directed a film called The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. It's an examination of inequality in America through the lens of her famous family's company. Again, thank you so much for making time, Abigail. We were talking about unionization before the break. And of course, Disney has had one of the most famous / infamous CEOs in American history, the famous Bob Iger. How open is Disney leadership to negotiating with unions, with employees that are trying to organize? Is this happening in good faith?
So at the time I started pestering them and nudging them, very, very not open, as not open as they could possibly be. So it was important to start with the shaming. And so there was a $63 million payday that one in 2018 Bob took home, Bob Iger. Yep. And that was during the same year that people were not being able to pay their own expenses. Again, it's personal. It's very personal. And like how you can sleep at night, I do not understand. So, but the unions had gotten together, they commissioned a study, they'd started working together. And, you know, I mean, partly to help them. They've used it as an organizing tool and so forth. So flash forward to today, and they have just this year signed a package worth $24 an hour. So it's been a significant change. And I've heard noises from management saying, you know, that was a bit of a mistake. So they're really singing a different song now, even though, you know, it's going to continue to be a fight just because it always is a fight.
It's amazing to me because I've had on numerous CEOs, and I would call them professional CEOs, right, that come in to fix companies, lead large companies, expand companies, right, drive the profitability, return shareholder value. And I've heard from a number of these CEOs, I always want the people that work for me paid well. Yeah. Because my business does better when people show up not stressed beyond capacity about whether or not they're going to pay rent or pay for their medicine or prescriptions or their kids' education or their car payment, right? You want people focused on their work and motivated, a constant theme. I'm so happy to hear of the success of this project that you engaged back in 2018. And I just wanted to reemphasize these statistics, Abby, that you shared. When the unions in 2018 commissioned a study, these are the Disney unions, what they found was that 78% of Disney employees didn't make 73. Thank you. We want to get this right. 73% of employees weren't earning enough from Disney and these were full-time employees. 73% of them couldn't cover their basic living costs. And at the time, CEO Bob Iger was making $63 million a year. There's a line I want to run past you, Abby, and just get your visceral reaction to it, because it I heard some echoes of my own thinking when I read the title of your film. I have been talking about, since I graduated from law school in 2003, the idea of the mythology of meritocracy in this country. Mm-hmm. And that once you earn that $1 million or two, then you think you need to earn 5 and 7 and 10, and that this makes you a hyper-valuable person. That we define people's usefulness, their almost their moral virtue in this economy, especially through a lot of Republican talking points, based on their income. Mm-hmm. But that is a mythology, right? Like, it is not always the case that those of the greatest merit make the most. And it is antithetical to capitalism to assume that you should pay workers less because you need them to buy the goods that you produce. We need people going to Disney movies and buying Disney products.
Exactly.
Your reactions to that.
There's an inherent tension for any CEO. Like Henry Ford very famously said, I want to pay all my workers so much they can afford, you know, anything coming off this production line. He also said at the same time, you know, it's really frustrating because all I need is a pair of hands and I have to hire a whole person. So I think all CEOs are torn, and it's a natural tension, but there's such a thing as optimal tension, right?
Yes.
And what happened was that we lost the other side, the power of the other side that was pulling them from the other direction. So Wall Street won in the struggle and then doubled down on their victory and used their power to completely crush the voice of the workers who were telling CEOs everywhere that dignity is not optional. It's not a decision you make later with the extra money you have left over. It should be built into your business plan the day you start working.
I've said frequently, if you can't pay people a living wage, your business model stinks and maybe you need to be rethinking things.
Exactly.
And we can look to very clear trigger points, you know, like stock buybacks weren't legal until 1982. It was written into the Internal Revenue Code.
They were unethical.
Correct. The idea that CEO pay would be tied to a short-term return or some stock metric, again, it creates these very short-term incentives. And if you're all thinking to yourself, well, Wall Street, yeah, I don't like them, but listen, they're trying to create greater value and all these things. No, they're working on that same short-term incentive structure as well, with no consideration, no incentive built around whether or not the workers and the middle class in this country can continue to consume the goods that these largest corporations produce. My special guest is Abigail Disney. Her film that came out in 2022, just to correct what I said before, is 2022, The American Dream and Other Fairy Tales. You can find it at AmericanDreamDoc.com. It is available to rent or buy on Apple TV and Prime Video. You can find out more about Abigail at AbigailDisney.com. Abigail, we got a lot of swing voters. We still have undecideds, if you can believe it, in Wisconsin. And in just a few moments, can you share with us your message to those voters here in Wisconsin?
You know, Democrats are the party that is fighting for working people. This is what I care about. The freaking economy won't stand up unless we pay working people.
Thank you, Abigail. I am going to be watching your film this weekend.
Thanks for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of Civic Media and the Patriotic Millionaires. For more information, go to patrioticmillionaires.org and be sure to tell your friends. The Patriotic Millionaires buy advertising across a number of Civic Media stations.